Nearly got a try on that left-hand side. What happened?
Oh, but I've gone up and over and bloody head over biscuit. It wasn't enough stability there for myself, but no, I was busting for a bit of meat this game. It didn't seem to work out.
Hello, cheers, and welcome to the Scrum of the Earth podcast, the weekly show for news, reviews, great interviews, and so much more all about the world of rugby. My name is David Lawrence. I'm an American rugby fan who follows the game wherever I can find it all over the globe. If you'd like to get in touch, well, I'm easy to find on all your socials, and you can always just drop an email to thescrumoftheearth@gmail.com. Well, as you have no doubt surmised by now, this is not your regular weekly episode, but it's in fact yet another bonus episode. This time, I'm ecstatic to welcome back one of my favorite guests, frankly, and also a legend of USA Rugby. 10 years ago, he was our National Development Director for the Sevens program. He's been the USA Rugby Performance Director. He led the USA Rugby delegation at the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio, played for us in the Sevens, of course, managed to sneak in a few caps for the 15s along the way. But most of you will now know him as the CEO of my beloved New England Free Jacks. I'm speaking, of course, of Alex Magleby. Mags, welcome back, and how the heck are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. And I'm really excited that I get to be on the bonus episode. This is a bonus.
Well, it's been 139 straight weeks of weekly episodes, and then there's also 100 bonus episodes. So
that's unbelievable body of work. Congratulations. That is awesome.
I'm trying to decide, trying to think of something big for the 3-year anniversary. So we shall see.
Remember when you started it? That's amazing. Congratulations.
I've been really lucky. I've discovered that if you want to talk about rugby, people who love rugby want to talk. I've had some incredible guests, Yes. So I saw you briefly at the St. Patrick's Day Festival this past weekend. How good was it to get back to winning ways at Fort Quincy?
It was just so good to be. I love our match days. I just absolutely love them. And, our staff gets there pretty early and everybody's working hard throughout the day. Just the energy in the stadium is so awesome. There's kids running around and people are catching up with old buddies and meeting new people, and people are getting introduced to the game for the first time, and then they get the whole Free Jacks experience on the field and they get to watch that drama unfold. And sure, it was drama for sure on Saturday, but I was super excited to see the boys. At first they were in that moment of what's happening here, and we weren't quite firing on all cylinders and didn't have the right side of the ref and a whole host of other things. And, it was great to see them crawl through that kind of mental state and really put in a great performance.
Yeah. And from where I was sitting, it was nice because it felt weird because we got down early, but the crowd didn't seem to worry too much. It showed a lot of confidence, I thought, in our fans too, that they were like, yeah, we got this. We got these guys.
Yeah. We just have the best supporters, win, lose, or draw. I think it's an awesome group from the very beginning, but it just gets layered in every year. And as new people come in, they understand the values of the organization and the sport. And you can see that being shared with new fans. And it's just an awesome, awesome energy. It's an awesome vibe. And I think they really get behind the team. And that's great to see. And that helps the players. Our players talk about that. That helps them enormously to our home field advantage.
The fact that they're so accessible to, and players who aren't in the match day 23 are just kind of around the stadium. Got yet another photo with Holden Younger, one of my favorite guys. It's such a cool fan experience.
It is. It is an unbelievable fan experience. And that's right. I mean, our players on their own choosing make themselves very accessible. And that's kind of the rugby way in a lot of ways, but it provides that intimacy that you don't get in a lot of other sports entertainment.
So I know you're someone who keeps very busy. You're a very serious guy in a lot of ways, obviously, but you also had to take a
serious.
I was wondering if that was going to go anywhere. You obviously know how to take a step back and just kind of enjoy life. Did you just flat out have fun at the game this weekend?
Yeah, I have fun at all our home festivals. They're magic, and they just seem to get better and better. And there's always something we learn from and to work on. And that's cool too. That's a cool challenge coming out of that. Everybody's exhausted coming out of those. And we were right back at it. And, responding to fans who had good feedback after the game as always. And, our after action review was very productive on Monday, and we're looking forward to Yacht Rock, and that's awesome. But I really, truly love our match day experiences. And I do allow myself to enjoy them as much as I possibly can and be the our biggest fan and watch the action unfold on the field. And my family's usually there, and friends, and meeting new friends. It's really cool.
Well, this is not in the script, but it just occurred to me. You mentioned the feedback you get afterwards. It's another great thing that you and the organization do, where, like, on the Facebook supporter group, you know, people are saying this and that, and people are complaining. You don't just ignore them. You jump in and you say, "Hey, we're looking at that. Thanks for talking to us." Like, you and TK are all over it. It's just honest and straightforward. And I just don't think a lot of sports, even much less teams, get, you know, that kind of honest interaction with the people in charge.
Yeah, and we don't have all the answers, right? And since the very beginning, this is about all of us making this better. And it's our fans who've made it what it is and continue to make it what it is. And, you know, our job has been to try to continue to take that feedback in and make it even better. And we just really appreciate the fact that people are willing to, you know, provide feedback. And almost inevitably, most of them are positive in terms of things that either should keep happening or that need minor fixes. And sometimes there's things that need, you know, need a shaking and to change more rapidly. But our fans have been really honest, you know, with management about what they want. And that's really cool. And I love that.
When you started this thing, did you have any guess that this franchise would be so successful so quickly? Like, how proud are you of the legacy that you helped create and are still forging as we speak right now?
Yeah, you know, it's some parts of it are just a complete dream. I was looking at some photos and video from Saturday's match. It was our second highest attended game ever. It was jammed, which it creates its own problems, but in a good way. You know, those are good problems for us to solve in the future. And thinking about our first couple of years, we would have been just like begging, dreaming that was even possible. And now here you have a full stadium, you know, basically a sellout in seated capacity. And, you know, half those fans didn't necessarily know rugby 5-6 years ago. And now they've fallen in love with the Free Jacks and the Free Jacks experience. And now they're introduced to one of the world's greatest games. And it's just awesome that we're able to do that. And so if that's just after the last kind of half decade, where are we going to be, you know, kind of as we approach World Cup 31 and 33? And that's, it's really cool to think about the potential.
I've got questions about that for sure. Coming up.
And our challenge is to lose, kind of going back to our original point, uniqueness, yeah, intimacy, and, you know, just the accessibility of this whole experience as we continue to grow, hopefully.
It's funny you mentioned that. So there's a player who plays for Edinburgh and he plays for Scotland, Pierre Schoeman. And when he first started with them, I kind of reached out to him randomly, like I always do, just say, "Hey, I'm a random American guy with this podcast. And any chance he would want to talk to me?" And he was like, "Yeah, great, great." And then I never heard from him again. And some Scottish friends of mine were like, "Yeah, that's the SRU. That, you know, once a player comes into the fold, the SRU are like, no, 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 no. We will tell you who you talk to and when." And the Free Jacks is almost the opposite of that. It's been so great. The number of players I've talked to, and, like, you know, on match day, it's just been so great. I hope that's something that's going to continue as part of our sort of DNA.
I would hope so. I think it is it's also in who we recruit, you know, as a team, kind of our value system and what we look for in players, and then how TK and Scott go about that. I mean, that's also part of it too. It's just looking for people who are going to fit into our value system and live those behaviors every day. And the number one value is putting community first, right? And so we have to live and breathe that every day and chase that value down with our behaviors. And so hopefully that is a value system that is so strong and ingrained and keeps getting stronger every year, like a, you know, like a muscle, that continues even as we get new players and the game continues to advance here in the United States.
So you were on the Jacks Rangers show just last week. Shout out to Phil, my good buddy, who did an incredible job as always. It was a really great episode. He got a few things out of you that I didn't know, like, you know, like, you don't really have a team elsewhere in the world that you follow closely, mostly because you've had so many great experiences with so many different clubs, different organizations over the years. It made me wonder, like, how much rugby do you actually watch? Do you make a point of watching you know, all the MLR action? Were you watching the men's Six Nations these last couple of months? Or are you just, you know, happy to get away from a very time consuming job?
Yeah, it depends on what phase of life I'm in. You know, I've probably consumed more rugby video than pretty much anybody. You know, that was my job for years and years and years. My day job was video analytics. And then, of course, by night I was coaching and then continued to rise in the coaching ranks. So, you know, multiple decades of digesting every single possible angle of rugby. And so I really appreciate just being a fan and just being able to watch the game and not have to always break down. But I also miss parts of that as well. And as you know, my family is really involved in this experience and sharing the game with them. And the Free Jacks game is also really important. So it's, you know, like on a given weekend, I'm probably not sitting down and going through every possible game that I could at where I was at one stage in my life. And I'm sure I'll be back to that at another stage in my life. I'm very fortunate. I've played stadiums throughout the world and, you know, on virtually every continent besides Antarctica, and coached in many of those same stadiums as well and with great clubs. So it's, there's not a favorite. So it's, you know, my favorite is Free Jacks and the US Eagles. And those are the two teams I really follow, and all the rest are friends, but not somebody that I'm deeply following on a regular basis.
Well, Mags, thank you again for sharing your time with us here at the Scrum of the Earth. I've got four things that I want to get to this evening while also being very conscious of your time.
Only three and a half. We can only do three and a half.
Oh, man. Okay. Let me, I got to start editing. Hold on. Yes. So before I do that, I want to make sure I don't let this opportunity slip by. Last time we spoke, I asked you about the legendary coach, Larry Gelwicks. What I hadn't realized at the time was he was the inspiration for one of the few rugby films I've ever encountered, yeah. Forever Strong.
Yeah.
In that movie, he's portrayed by Gary Cole, probably most famous for being Lumberg in Office Space. The obvious question is, when the docudrama about the Free Jacks finally gets made, who's going to portray you?
Oh, that is great. Wow. That's a really good one. You know, Carrot Top.
Wait, Carrot Top 20 years ago or Carrot Top now?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, the old Carrot Top. Who knows? But that's a really awesome.
I was thinking along the lines of Damian Lewis, who played Major Richard Winters in the Band of Brothers. Good call.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lexi Lawless. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. Alexander, he could be on the list. I think he might be too short.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe one of those docudramas where I play myself, but I have like a bit part where I'm playing like, yeah.
You're in it, but you're not Alex.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
You could be TK.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. We switch each other. That'd be awesome. I took acting fun in college. I could, you know, pretend to shave.
Well, thing one tonight has line. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Don't give me any reading lines or anything else like that. But I could, you know.
Oh no! I've directed. You give notes. You don't give line readings. Thing one tonight obviously has to be about the Free Jacks. On Phil's show last week, you said
isn't everything about the Free Jacks?
I mean, for me, but you know, yeah. You're a worldly guy. Come on.
Come on.
You just said you've been on almost all the continents.
Yes.
So you mentioned with Phil that you and the other MLR owners and I guess stakeholders sort of regularly chat about the league. How it's going? What can be done to make it better, along with a modicum of trash talking on game days? What are some things that other people in similar positions to your own with other franchises have learned from the way we do business? Yeah, I say we as if I have anything to do with it. But, you know, what are a couple of things that the New England Free Jacks do right that other teams have learned from?
I think number one, going back to our conversation earlier, is, you know, listening to our people, right? I think that's a really important thing, listening to, you know, our fans and the supporters and what works, and then really supporting that. I think that is important. So that's one for sure. But I think that then also breeds certain things that happen in the stadium that are really fun. You know, we've got a really fun group of supporters who welcome fans from other teams, bring a lot of energy, and that's awesome. So I think everybody in the league would recognize that by far the Free Jacks supporters are the best in the league. And I hate it when people say things like that. They're the, you know, like superlative natures that's not in a non-measurable context, but that is anecdotally what you'll hear from other owners of their experience coming to Free Jacks matches. I think they really appreciate our stadium layout and the intimate environment that we've created, the noise of that environment, and all just of the unique things that go into an entire day with the Free Jacks. You know, there's the spotlight events, which are really important to us, where we get to showcase what's happening in the community game. That's really awesome. You know, our tasting experiences are fairly unique. Now that you can get a season pass of tasting experiences is very cool. And that
really
also connecting with local craft breweries, that, you know, that's important to us as well. And making sure that they have a voice, for lack of a better term, amongst all the noise. I think that's awesome. And that connects, you know, our fans with, you know, local craft brewers, which is really cool. I think that's awesome. You know, other owners, you know, really point that out. The match day experience itself, you know, we're kind of always iterating on the programming elements. It continues to need work, and we recognize that, but there's some really cool parts that happen around that, from halftime shows and other things. And then just that everybody can come on the field after and celebrate together in the post-match party. I think that's really awesome. And so I think that uniqueness, where music is tied into kind of everything we do, community is tied into everything we do, good food, locally derived in most cases, is tied into everything we do, and supporting kind of local economy, I think are all really important pieces that other people recognize. And together, that creates the energy that I think owners talk about when they say the Free Jacks, you know, are league leading in the experience of their game day.
Well, the obvious flip side to that coin is, what have you learned from those ongoing conversations? Like, what are some things you've taken from the people running other franchises in this competitions to help make the Free Jacks stronger?
Yeah, and I think they all do different things really uniquely well that are the best in the league. You know, in every game that we've gone to, we've probably taken something and said, oh, that's awesome, and then talk to them about why'd you come to that decision? How does that work? Okay, that's great. You know, you probably look at Seattle. Historically, they've done a really good job with their season tickets. You go to Utah, has a great programming and a really nice energy in the stadium. They do a nice job with that. You know, New Orleans had a band that would bring in the fans from a different part of the stadium, like a parade. That was a cool thing. And then everybody has these different things that are really, really cool, I think, that we've learned from, and we've kind of packaged them all together. And there's a whole host of those other things that happen. You know, some people do a really good job activating with their sponsorships and learning, okay, how did that work? Okay, great. That's awesome. We'll take that. But regularly on phone calls with colleagues throughout the league, you know, San Diego last year had an awesome, at Snapdragon, an awesome day of ticket sales and attendance. You know, first call that night was, you know, to their owner. And, you know, then I was working with their marketing people, what was working, what was not, what lessons were they, you know, and so that is an awesome, really cool feedback loop that is happening in the MLR, has continued to happen in the MLR between teams. So in very many ways that we compete really hard on the field. We compete against each other. We measure each other on ticket sales and sponsorship and all these things. But at the end of the day, everybody is trying to grow this thing together and help each other outgrow it. And I think that's really powerful.
The next thing I wanted to hit, thing two, is the league itself. So I have a vivid recollection of being at a bar playing poker one night. I think it was the Seawolves' first championship. So that game was being aired on, you know, FS9 or something for the final. None of the TVs in the place had it on. I asked the staff if, you know, just one TV might be set to watch the rugby, and they looked at me like I was nuts. One of them quite literally said, "There's rugby now?" Can you talk a bit about where MLR is now compared to where it was in 2018?
What year was that? That was 2018?
I think it was 2018.
Yeah. I mean, it's grown massively. I mean, the league is 7 years old now, right? And we're here. You know, the fact that a professional competition, you know, with full-time professional athletes competing in the world's contact game, you know, in North America has existed for that long is a massive celebration. But beyond that, that you've seen growth throughout those 7 years is really cool. I think you would see that it is slowly becoming, you know, out of its... not a lot of people know about it, certainly in the cities where there's teams, lot of people kind of like, oh yeah, now I know. It's top of the funnel kind of knowledge that not only does rugby exist, but I actually know a team, a brand, where it exists. You know, and not yet in total high percentage, but you now can close the gap more quickly for my kids to participate. You know, certainly New England, that's something we're continuing to work really, really hard on for not only learn to play initiatives, but each side of the funnel of, you know, the youth participation model, learn to play, so entry in, you know, linking up with clubs. And then on the other side, kind of that performance travel team experience that, you know, the American Scholastic model is used to. So kind of both ends of the spectrum. And then, so hopefully we see more robust clubs continuing to grow in our region as we help with both sides of that and helping the coaches in the middle. So that's really cool. So I think that is awesome. And then, you know, kids are, we just, last year we started flag rugby in my town. You know, the school was 150, you know, kids, and 55 of them were playing flag rugby last year. This year, you know, we opened registration today and it's basically almost sold out, but then they're going to play in the New England Rugby Flag Championships at the Free Jacks game on June 2nd. And so that kind of phenomenon you're seeing happening more and more often, because now there's structures that people understand. Oh, town rec, I get town rec, and a lot of New England towns have sports. So you can play soccer, baseball, and t-ball, and basketball, and now flag rugby towns. And then that continues to grow. So seeing that embedded in the infrastructure of our traditional American sporting landscape is really cool. And that'll continue to grow too. So that's awesome.
And what about from a competitive standpoint, as someone who follows quite literally as much rugby as I possibly can, one of the comps I love is the NPC in New Zealand. I love that our seasons dovetail so nicely that we can have players going back and forth. I mean, Jason Poitras winning two championships in the same calendar year. That's just so cool. Awesome. Do you feel we're close to being on par with a comp like that?
Yeah, you know, my opinion probably wouldn't be that strong in that regard, but I do hear from others, and we've had plenty of coaches who have come from the NPC and have gone back, who would say that, you know, this now is on par or beyond, you know, kind of where the Free Jacks were, a couple of the teams in the MLR the last couple of years, would perhaps be surpassing some of those teams. You know, it's not, I don't think anybody would say right now that it's, you know, in the kind of echelon of the Premiership or the URC or Super Rugby, but that's a goal to be in that conversation. And the good news is that it's not a massive chasm. It's not like Major League Soccer trying to be like the Premiership in soccer. It's not like MLS trying to be like, you know, La Liga, you know, be like Barcelona. It's just not, that gap is much more expensive and much more time. Where in rugby, that gap is actually not crazy. That is not a generational time frame, and that's really cool. I mean, that is a decade time frame with focus, even faster potentially. And you know, but all these things have to happen at the same time in order to kind of make it work. And you know, risk your investments. You got to see the fandom continue to increase, and the fandom continue increases, and you can, you know, it's, so it's kind of this. We're inching up. Pretty quickly, which is awesome. I think it's a really good product. I think it's from a rugby standpoint, I think it's an entertaining game. I think there's an awesomeness to how Major League Rugby is played, and I think it's really enjoyable. And there's been countless people from overseas who've come and sat down and watched a game with me, whether they're from, you know, a club in the Premiership or Super Rugby, or one of the national team coaches from tier one or tier two countries, and they really have been very complimentary to the product on the field. So that continues to increase, and that is awesome. And that is a big shout out then to the playing group and all the work that they've done, and the coaches. You've seen the level of professionalism in the coaching ranks increase over that same time frame, and that all then begets a better product and a better product, which is very cool.
So thing three, Major League Rugby has a new team this year. Well, three new teams, maybe two and a half. But one in particular stands out, because as a fan, I don't know. This one just kind of felt foisted upon us. The team in Carolina, they threw the league schedule into disarray. They caused, you know, some traveling fans some headaches with their impact on who's playing who, when, and where. We had almost no information about what they'd even look like until the 11th hour. But I feel sure I'm missing something. Can you please explain to me and the listeners, like, what's up with the anthem? How did this all come about? And what are your feelings about their last minute inclusion for this season?
Yeah, so this has been in the works for quite a while. Like, but it's been a it, it was it, it was it was a more comprehensive timeline. You know, last year we paid for the Hawks program. You know, MLR has been funding things like that. You know, we funded USA Rugby's some of their national team tours in previous years, and just trying to support, you know, the national team game as much as we possibly can where we can. And the Hawks were a part of the First Step initiative, but the vision for that has always been, okay, how does that then grow and be a part of MLR, and what capacity is that? The players we draft go there for a couple of years, but what does that look like? And so the league's been working on those models with USA Rugby and World Rugby for a while. And then I think when the opportunity, I'm going to say it's an opportunity because it ends up being awesome, but you know, unfortunate when New York and Toronto left, but the opportunity in terms of Anthem then having a chance to come in, there was a spot. You know, it was an opportunity for a team to come in, so we could have even teams and we could make it happen now. And why wait another year? There's players that need to play. There's a, you know, willing three willing bodies to make it work. And yes, there's going to be some short-term pain on schedules and a whole host of other things, and that really affected us in terms of what we could communicate and sell tickets and all of these pieces. But in the end, I think that was the right decision. I think having them is a real positive, because I think a lot of players are getting reps that otherwise wouldn't be getting those same number of reps right now, who are young American players who then can filter back into their MLR clubs or continue down there in time. And I think that is a really positive initiative for that. And time will tell how those players do on the national team and in the league, but more so that three bodies could come together like that and make something like that work. You know, a professional sports league, you know, with all the various opinions of the ownership group, you know, 12 different owner, 11 different owners, an NGB like USA Rugby, you know, that's under the auspices of the Ted Stevens Act and everything else, and a federation, World Rugby, to come together and create something like that in a short amount of time. I think that's the success, and that demonstrates kind of finally that we're getting to a point where we can build collectively towards a World Cup, and the ecosystem can be collaborative. And rugby, in a lot of ways around the world forever, has not necessarily been that way. It's, you know, in many ways it's been its own worst enemy. And, you know, USA Rugby is a great example. You know, at any given year, what are the national team games in 6 months? And you can't monetize something you don't know, but you don't know because those games, you know, aren't scheduled yet, and there's a whole host of other things. But now, okay, well, that's probably, if we can all be collaborating the way we are now, there's things they can fix to make this really start accelerating in its growth and the commercial opportunities that are inherent in that growth. Then, does that make
So
sense?
how much?
I think
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
that's a real positive thing.
I already feel better about this, by the way. But
Yeah.
how much? You know, how involved was World Rugby? Is this World Rugby kind of bending over backwards a little to try to make sure that the USA, you know, don't embarrass ourselves in a home World Cup? Like, is that kind of
It's
the
not
motivation
embarrassing. I
for this?
think, you know, it's, I think there are certain people that would argue. So let's just say you don't care about the national team, but certain people would argue that success in a World Cup, from a commercial standpoint, the home team doing well could improve the success of that commercially, right? There are people believe that if the US is in the quarterfinals, then it'll be a much more successful World Cup. I have no data to prove that one way or the other. That makes me feel good to think that our national team will be really good come the World Cup. And World Rugby has always been involved in initiatives with USA Rugby and Rugby Canada and other countries to try to figure out ways to improve the national teams. And they've helped, you know, fund certain projects, if you will, in the past. You know, remember the North American Four in the early 2000s and the Churchill Cup, and there's a whole host of other things that have happened in time. But none of those really had any commercial underbelly, so they didn't survive. And what I think we're seeing now is actually the commercial underbelly of all of this is Major League Rugby, is the owners are, you know, working really hard to fund, you know, a league that now has then the commercial foundation to grow from. And now I think these kind of projects, then it's easier for World Rugby to help support. But then beyond that, it's like, okay, now it can deliver to the initiatives that they've always wanted to help with, which is a more successful national team and a more competitive World Cup. A more competitive World Cup is good for everybody, right? Parity as we see in the MLR, is good for everybody. Like, the more competitive it is, the more intriguing it is, the more drama, the more likely people are to tune in. And that's awesome. I think the last World Cup that we just had was an epic World Cup. It was fantastic rugby, but games were, you know, played down to the last second a lot of times. And that is great drama, and that is great for current fans, but also bringing in the next generation of fans.
Well, that brings us, you teed this up so nicely. This brings us right to thing four, which I admit I'm probably most excited about. We had the annual Free Jacks winter party a few months ago. At the time, you had some great insights you shared about USA Rugby, about the prep that's been going, you know, to begin to be hosts for a World Cup. I admit I'd been in a bit of a dark place about our Eagles and how things have been going, but you were like a shining light in that darkness. You didn't say too much. You didn't get poetic or theoretical, but you laid out some hard and fast reasons for optimism heading towards, you know, 2027. Please, you know, if you could share your thoughts about USA Rugby, where we stand, where we can go in these next 7 years, and why we should be hopeful given the, I'm sorry, not 2027, that's in Australia, but why we should be hopeful given the cold hard fact that we didn't even qualify in 2023.
Yeah, I think just going back, people keep bringing up the qualifying, and that was tough. It was tough not qualifying, and we probably should, and we didn't. I think what people also forget is that in the pandemic, in a country as spread out as we were, we were not together. You know, I think that when I was responsible for the national teams, that year after the 2015 World Cup, so 2016, I think we had more test matches that single year than the team basically had from 2019, the end of the 2019 World Cup to the qualifier. So they just didn't have any time together. You know, there's a couple things that were affecting that, but primarily it was the pandemic, but it was also the financial constraints that the union was under. It was struggling. You know, it was trying to grow as fast as it possibly could. And, you know, there's four national teams that need to be taken care of, and then, you know, competitions and a whole host of other things. And there's a lot of hands in that pie, and they just don't have the financial resources. And again, then you can't commercialize it because you don't know what your test match schedule is, because you can't sell, right. You can't sell sponsorship. So it's this really bad feedback loop in that case. But that team just had very little time together, and that's really tough. And their competition had a lot more time together. You know, the Uruguays and Chiles of the world were primarily with each other throughout that period of time. And so that helps performance. Again, we should have been in the World Cup. We weren't. But I have complete confidence in the people in charge of the national team. And they're doing an awesome job and just bringing in a vision that people can buy into. And that's really awesome. You know, Scott Lawrence is the head coach now. And, you know, Scott came up through the ranks of USA Rugby, and he's coached at all levels, and he's been successful at all levels, and he understands MLR. So he gets it, and he's creating a really nice vision that people are buying into. And then don't forget, MLR is investing, you know, millions and millions of dollars every year to develop players and give, you know, Americans and a whole host of other players from around the world a chance to compete in a really high level competition that is making them better professionals and better at the game and all those pieces. So all of these things are starting to all kind of happen now. And we're finally starting to get that momentum. So it was really great to see. You know, in 27 in Australia, are we going to go and be in the quarterfinals? Who knows? That's probably a big ask from where we are now. But by 31, another cycle and another generation coming through, it's pretty exciting time.
You kind of touched on this. Is geography ultimately the biggest enemy of USA Rugby? Is it the fact that some of our great players are in Boston and some of the others are in San Diego, and these places are just incredibly far apart?
I just think historically, if you look at where dollars were spent in rugby in this country, it was on airfare. You know, I think the demise of the Super League, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s is you couldn't, you know, you're in Philly, and in order to get a quality game, you had to travel to play another high quality men's club at the time, you know? And so what ended up happening is we ended up creating these clubs that were really strong, but then in order to get competition, they have to travel, you know? And so it gets more costly, and then so less people can afford to do it. So there's fewer clubs, and it just became, again, this really bad cycle. And you look at the WPL now, and the WPL has done a great job holding on and continue to push forward. But for, you know, Beantown to get a really high quality game, they're having to travel, and those players are spending hundreds of dollars out of pocket just to go get a quality game so that they can try to put their hand up for the national team. That's really tough. And then they're, you know, coming home to work and do all the other things. That is a really tough situation. So a lot of money is being spent on plane fare, not a lot of money is being spent on, you know, focusing locally with higher quality coaches. And, you know, if things were more regionalized, and yeah, and if you just take the Boston area, and if historically the top clubs in Boston were just competing against each other, and that was this kind of really intense competition, you know, then yeah, I think you would see a lot more, you know, the dollars as opposed to being spent on travel would be spent on coaching and everything else. And that assumes those dollars are then available and people make that choice. Regardless, geography has always been this thing in the United States that has been a challenge. I think somewhat that has changed now that you have MLR as a top thing, because then the professionals and the travel is not like an issue like as it once was, that you currently still see in the WPL and the kind of the pinnacle of the women's game here in the United States.
Well, what is the 2031 World Cup going to be like? Is it going to be spread out all over the country? Is it going to be sort of regionalized? Will any matches be played in Canada? Do we even know any of those answers yet?
Yeah, I think there's a draft plan in order to get the World Cup bid, an appointment. There's a lot of work still to be done there, is my understanding, but a lot of really positives. And the good news, you have good people, you know, kind of moving that forward, who are very good at running these things and involved in the 94 Soccer World Cup and everything else that have these massive sports successes in this country. You know, we also have the FIFA World Cup in 26. And so you're seeing some of the stadiums already being expanded for that, like Gillette here in New England. And that'll
I didn't
then,
even know that. Wow.
That'll then benefit, you know, rugby fields on those same stadiums 5 years later. So that's a real positive. So all of the things are starting to happen. You know, there was, I think, originally 27 potential host areas. I worked on the bid with the Kraft Group for New England, you know, and that's great. And that's, we're one of the potential areas that would be hosting. Who knows what that looks like? You know, you're going to have a lot of fans coming from overseas, but you're also going to have a lot of Americans who have either fallen in love with the game over the last decade because of MLR, or that are now getting introduced to it the first time and really excited to go see it because it's this great, big, massive event. So I think, like the Soccer World Cup in 94, you'll see it on both coasts and in the middle for sure. I mean, I would think so. I would hope so. And I think that's the plan, certainly.
If we were able to somehow make the knockout stages in that World Cup, would that mean for USA Rugby, like, what would that mean? Would that be the moment when pundits across the globe can finally give it a rest with the "Will the Sleeping Giant Awaken" articles?
I don't know if they'll ever give that up, but I think it would be amazing. It would just be an amazing experience for those athletes and, you know, all the American fans. I think that would be just stellar. And, you know, hopefully it's beyond a quarterfinal. And that's what I was, you know, when I was performance director of USA Rugby, and you go through these kind of bullet points for like, okay, what is our vision for 20 years or 10 years or 15 years? And, you know, somebody would inevitably say, well, we want to make a quarterfinal in the World Cup. It's like, well, what does that mean even? We want to win a World Cup. That's the goal, right? And then there's like, well, that's impossible. So you don't even aim for that. And it's like, well, no, let's aim for that. And, you know, if we miss, but then perhaps we'll be in a quarterfinal, and then we can decide if that was a worthy journey, which I think inevitably it will be a worthy journey. And I think the national team would be great at that stage. Regardless, I think the World Cup will be quite successful for fandom and just sharing the game with more and more people. And then I think a national team, the Eagles doing well, is like icing on the cake.
Do you have a sense of, I mean, I don't know how closely you're able to look at the numbers of the people who actually come to Free Jacks games. As somebody who's been sitting in the stands the whole time, you know, from the Carrick Cup, like, it seems like a lot more what I would just call rugby people are there. Like, it seemed in previous years, the people who are playing with Mystic, who are playing with these local clubs, kind of eschewed Major League Rugby. They're like, you know what, I've got my own rugby, I'm going to do this. But now they're showing up, and you can tell because of the shouts in the crowd, that's offside, sir, not rolling away, sir. All the sirs you hear this year, it's a big difference. Do you have any idea, like, who's sitting in these seats?
No, I'd say that we had probably had a very, very rugby-centric group to start. And I think in time that has, as more and more fans have come into it, it's less rugby-centric, meaning people who've played or are playing.
Interesting.
There are Free Jacks fans, right? And now they're connected to rugby because of the Free Jacks, which is awesome. And their kids now, you know, go to their Learn to Play initiatives and the YMCA. And that's awesome. I think you're seeing more and more of that. But also, I think in general, you know, we've got a great rugby community in New England. We always have. There's a lot of great clubs. There's a lot of great universities. There's a lot of volunteers out there trying to move the high school game forward. I think we've always had a really healthy, maybe we're just a very good community. And I think that community gets to come together 8 times spring, summer around Free Jacks matches. So we don't get to do that in any other environment. So it's a really awesome place to go do that and celebrate.
Just two final questions for you. I don't know why I keep mentioning it, but you know, as somebody who's been a Free Jacks fan from the beginning, there's obviously, you know, as a fan, you get certain players who you particularly like, and then when they disappear, you kind of miss them. I'm just wondering, are there a few players that are no longer with the Free Jacks that you just kind of think, oh, gee, I miss that guy? Connor Kindergren is always my example. I remember a game where he was out with like a minor injury, so he was up in the stands literally manning a camera and just doing some extra video work. And it was such a microcosm to me of the all hands on deck attitude of this organization. Do you miss players like that from the early days?
Yeah, I mean, Connor was fantastic. And there's a whole list of players like that who've either retired or moved on that were awesome when they're here. And they were great people. And they really live the values of the organization because that's who they are. And they carry on those values, you know, as they moved on. Jackson was one of those, and Jackson's back now. It's awesome to have Jackson back. You know, he's just a great kid. A kid's the wrong word, but you know what I mean. He's just a great kid. And there's a long list of people like that every year. And it's sad to see them go and they choose to move on. But then the great news is you get to meet some amazing new people who come on board and get to be challenged to kind of try to live those values every day as well and perform on the field and perform off it, right? Which is just as important.
Well, at the winter meeting, you mentioned again, is it the four pillars of the Free Jacks? Why would I try to put the words in your mouth? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, just it's always been. It's like, okay, how are we going to judge ourselves and why are we doing this and what does this mean? And, you know, it's humble, basically, hardworking and have fun are the kind of the three, and those get interpreted in different ways depending on the year and everything else. And, you know, for us, humble is just always defined as putting the community first. We're part of something that's much bigger than us or any individual one of us, and that's why we're doing it. You know, it's because we truly believe that this endeavor, rugby, is just an amazing tool to help bring people together and live better lives. And it's always been that way. And I think the second piece is just the behaviors of kind of who the original ownership group was and the original employees and players, and just very representative of New England, is get the work done and adapt and continue to work hard. You know, it's, and that requires hunger to do that. And that's a really important piece to us. And that is something we can measure, which is great. And then have fun. Like, we're in this because we're in the business of joy, and rugby is just really fun. And it's just really important that is a key piece. That's the glue, I think, that keeps it all together.
Final question for you tonight. Thank you so much again for your time. I recently spoke with a great Kiwi rugby journalist, and he said something that kind of gave me a chill. He said, you should be happy with how big rugby is in the U.S. right now, because if it gets too big, the NFL will simply squash it. What do you think about that?
I don't know what he's referring to, or she, or I'm not sure what the reference there. And in terms of squash, I think this country is a country of 330 million people. You know, we don't see ourselves as a competitor with the NFL. There's a lot of sports entertainment options out there. We're not in the same season. We're just not a competitor with NFL. You know, it's just not. We find that the ecosystem, certainly here in Boston, between all the pro sports teams, is very healthy and positive. We get a lot of support from the Patriots organization, from the Revolution, you know, Celtics, Bruins, and so forth, the Red Sox. It's very positive in that regard. So that's anecdotally at a local level. You know, I'd be curious what that reference is, but I just don't think that we're not, even when we get big, it's not even going to be, it's just not, it's not a, it's not, it doesn't compete with the NFL, right? It's not a, we don't play during the same season. The players, there's too many players who don't make it in the NFL. It's not an athlete. I was very curious what that person was trying to reference. And maybe there's just a lack of knowledge of what the NFL ecosystem really looks like or how things work here. I think down under in general, like, you know, the footy codes, they all compete with each other because Australia is what, 20 million people, and New Zealand's 4.5, whatever it is. And at the same time, you have rugby union, rugby league, Aussie rules in Australia, and soccer all competing at the same time for the same eyeballs. So I can understand that kind of mindset. But in a country of 330 million people where football gobbles up the fall, nobody's competing with football, and that nobody's even trying to compete with football, but there's plenty of other space for even during the fall for kind of niche things to exist and other sports to thrive. And there's MLS now has their championship, or has their championship in what, October? There's just a lot, and we have a massive population. So I don't think it's not a small piece of pie that we're trying to divvy up here at the same time. And I'm not sure that there'd be a fear of that from NFL ownership.
Max.
We put this on another side. It'd be really positive if more NFL owners were excited to get involved with rugby. Like
Yeah.
it's a positive. Yeah. If we get
As
to
we're
the point where
talking.
they're worried about us, then if that actually were to ever be the case, I think they're smart business people, and there would be a sound investment, and they'd bring them into the fold, if anything, because they've got stadiums that need tenants, and there's a whole host of other things that need to happen 365 for sports entertainment companies. So, yeah. I think it's a good problem to have when we get there.
As we're talking, I wonder if that's like an outsider's perception of how Americans view rugby, that we sort of equate it with football, like they are in direct competition like that. I'll have to follow up with him and maybe get some
Yeah,
more
very
info.
curious. This is not even like we're basically spring football, if you look at it that, if you take it to that nth degree. But it's spring. It's spring and summer. It's not. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of fans that cross over, but there are a lot of fans that don't.
Well, the fans are great this year. I'll be seeing you every single week. I can't wait for the rest of the festivals this year. Me and Phil have an idea cooked up for some upcoming festivals for some good outfits too. So,
Good. Keep me in the loop because I love it. It's one of my favorite parts. Yacht Rock is on
Max,
the call. That's going to be awesome.
you are the absolute best. It is so kind of you to share your thoughts and insights. I have to thank you for just creating such an incredible experience here in New England. Fans like me, like Phil, we're obviously in for the long haul. So to have this kind of consistency, this kind of success, I mean, it's just been a magical ride. We were both there in Chicago in July. It was one of the greatest days
Awesome.
ever.
Yeah.
And you're the prime mover behind this in a lot of ways. So thank you.
Yeah, it's all. I mean, like we've said from the very beginning, this is our fans and our players and our awesome rugby staff and front office staff. Everybody's continuing to move this forward. We just got a great community, and I'm just fortunate to be part of the journey, and it's a great ride. So let's continue to put the bricks on the road so we can go longer and faster.
Any last thoughts before I let you go? Do you want to talk up any of the upcoming festivals? Maybe some listeners who are this close to buying that ticket, which are going fast.
I mean, if you didn't wear it at St. Paddy's, it's just continuing to get better and better, the whole experience. The next one is Yacht Rock, which is April 6th. Our friends Buoys of Summer are back. They're amazing. Yacht Rock, man, they're awesome. We've got the Froze Festival before that. We have the Monumental Sevens, which is the National Collegiate Rugby Sevens
Oh,
qualifier.
yeah.
Now, the teams that have done well in that tournament the last few years are the teams who won the national championship. So it's great rugby. And that goes on all day. And so you can see some of the best of New England, but you also have teams traveling in from the Midwest and up and down the Eastern Seaboard, which is awesome. So it's become kind of like the feeding tournament into the NCAA championship. So there'll be great college rugby and future, national team players and MLR players competing at a high level. In the Monumental Seven. So yeah, April 6th, that's going to be huge.
I don't know why. I was really resistant to the sevens. I was so all in with the 15s that I was like, no, that's wrong. That's not the same game. No. And then Dallin Stanford turned me around. He and Jan Rutkowski, a Hall of Famer, a friend of mine, they both of them, when I said, yeah, I'm not really into the sevens, they looked at me like, what are you, nuts?
Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive. Yeah. It's all additive. It's amazing. And then sevens is an unbelievable game, and same with 15s, both to play and to coach and to watch.
Alex Magley, thank you again. It's been fantastic to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time to catch up. Cheers, my friend. Talk to you very
Yeah.
soon and be
That's
well.
fine. Thank you.